Dan Perkins Media presents a unique and exciting program. Truth Starts Now, a conversation with Dan Perkins. The left has taken away your rights to freedom of speech. Truth Starts Now is a platform for you to regain your voice. America and Americans will be better off if we can have civil and respectful conversations about the day's important issues. Now, here's your host, Dan Perkins.
Welcome to The Truth Starts Now. This is Dan Perkins, and joining us today is Mike Woller, who's written the book. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan.
And tell our viewers and listeners about the book, and then we'll try and pick it apart.
Well, big intel is to tell the story of how our vital national security community, especially the intelligence community, FBI and CIA in particular, went from being heroes of the Cold War, defending us against foreign enemies and domestic subversion and terrorism, to really consider much of the country as enemies and become not just politically correct, but to become woke and extremist on their own. So I wanted to know, how did this happen? Who was responsible? Why did it happen? When did it happen? And what can we do about it?
Thank you for that. That was very helpful. Before the show, we talked about the FBI and when it changed. When J. Edgar Hoover founded the FBI, he founded it as an investigation operation. They had worked with local law enforcement to investigate crimes and bring perpetrators to justice. But at some point in time in the history of the FBI, it became less of an investigation organization supporting police to be a surreptitious organization that did much more than what it was probably originally founded for. And is there in your mind, is there a point, Mike, where that's when it changed?
Yeah, it went through a few changes, sort of as society changed. So at first it was to investigate interstate crimes. And then early on there was anarchist terrorism, communist subversion and violence brought in by a lot of foreign immigrants to organize here in the U.S. And that's how Hoover got his start in the Justice Department. So when he took over the Bureau of Investigation, he expanded this. And then with Prohibition came gangsterism and the underground economy and so forth. So the FBI's powers were expanded. And then as the New Deal under FDR came in, you had many more federal laws. Therefore, a bigger FBI needed to enforce federal laws and investigate crimes that were now federal crimes. So it expanded, but it always had the mission of being an America First organization to support American founding principles and the Constitution as the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were framed. So it was, even though there were abuses then, if you're running the same agency for 48 years, of course there are going to be abuses, especially if there are a few laws to constrain you. But if you consider that the lack of constraints on the FBI and on Hoover, and the abuses that did take place, I would argue that today's FBI is far more abusive than Hoover's FBI ever was.
Right. I agree. But what changed it?
Well, like any bureaucracy, it developed a sense of mission creep after Hoover. Hoover kept it focused. He died in early 70s. And then it was sort of moribund and demoralized after Watergate and all the scandals, as the CIA was. What changed it was, though, after 9/11, when President George W. Bush took the brand new FBI director, Robert Mueller, and said, you are responsible for making sure that no terrorists ever kill any American citizen in our country ever again. So Mueller recreated the FBI from a bottom-up organization where the individual field offices, there are 56 of them around the country, are responsible for originating cases. So it was even though it had a strong director, it was a ground-up, bottom-up bureau that was not centralized. What Mueller did was he centralized it from the top. He created 63 new management positions at the top, and he cut the direct line between the director and the local special agents in charge of each local field office. So you had a lot of new hires and a mandate now to prevent crimes before they happen, which meant not just investigating known terrorists, but investigating innocent people as the mission creep kept on. So once all the jihadists were wiped out for the most part, or went underground, or the threat was no longer what it had been, the people in the FBI started looking for new enemies. Because if you can't justify your existence and you don't spend your annual budget, Congress is going to cut your budget the next time around. So they're up there. This is true for any bureaucracy, so it's not just the FBI. What made it most different, though, was because it was now centralized by the end of George W. Bush's administration in 2008, somebody like Obama came in with a political agenda to politicize the Bureau, top to bottom, with his plan to make a fundamental transformation of the United States. He needed the FBI as an instrument for that. The same with the CIA. So into his first term, by the summer of 2011, he had an executive order across the whole government imposing the first of the cultural warfare, critical theory, cultural Marxism on the government bureaucracies, and then had really deeply ideological people like General James Clapper, like his attorney general, who was a radical in college and never shied away from that radicalism, Eric Holder. And then James Comey was brought in to run the FBI. And in the CIA, you had John Brennan, who had been a Communist Party voter before he went into the CIA, now running the whole intelligence community and completely politicizing it.
So you had a situation where people who were not elected to office were making a fundamental change in America and its society and the way it dealt with laws.
Yes. And it wasn't even done under a law. It was done under executive orders by the president. So executive orders are constitutional. Presidents need to do it to say, this is how I'm going to prioritize how the government works. That's all fine. And they're changed from president to president, but they don't have the force of law. So rather than seek laws for this really vital, profound, fundamental transformation of our government and of our security services, Obama just did it by executive order. So the good part is it can be repealed. Trump did not repeal those executive orders. He kept them in place for the most part. So the next president can come in and repeal them if he has a plan to do so. That's a start of what needs to be done. But you're right. You have an unaccountable apparatus that it's actually so profound, this unaccountability. Remember when Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democrat leader, said out loud when Trump said he wants to take control of this apparatus in 2017, that they have six ways from Sunday to get you. So you have the Senate Democrat leader telling the president of the United States that they are all powerless to put the CIA and FBI under control. That means Schumer is admitting that these are states within a state and they've taken over our Democratic Republic.
What happened in your life that drove you to want to write this book?
Well, if you go way back, it started when I was a teenager in high school, and I was interested in the environmental movement because I love the outdoors, always did, and I love fishing off the coast of New England, and they were building a big nuclear power plant. And one of my teachers had gotten, he was a radical, but everybody liked him. Sort of this is in the late 70s, so he was sort of had been a hippie and not just an anti-war activist, but a pro-Viet Cong, pro-Hanoi activist. So he was siding with the other side during the war. We didn't understand that as kids, but we got involved in the environment movement to oppose this nuclear power plant. And I got further recruited into this activism, just an idealistic kid who was just nature-oriented. And then I was pulled aside by some professional organizers, and they isolated me, and they put me through what I later learned was a struggle session to criticize myself, to have them criticize everything about me, and to tear me down as an individual. And they said, why do you want to get involved in the anti-nuclear movement anyway? And I said, well, because I care about the environment. And they just said, we're here to overthrow American capitalism. That wasn't why I got involved. So I was out right away, but I thought, I'm going to just fight these guys, you know, for the rest of my life if I have to. So that's how I got started, when realizing I was becoming a dupe of an organized communist underground movement that was loyal to the Soviet Union.
Shocked, I would assume.
Yeah. So this book sprang from that ultimately, because I understand how these elements work. I understand how they take in a lot of well-meaning people, and then how we don't have an FBI anymore to guard against this type of subversion.
Do you think that the FBI can ever be changed?
It'll never change on its own. The current director, Chris Wray, I don't think really runs the Bureau. He's a millionaire Republican lawyer who, one of the swamp types who goes in and out of government, makes a lot of money at a big Washington law firm, gets a big Justice Department position, and then comes in as the FBI. He's being led around by the nose, in my view, by the woke crazies who have gotten up to the top management, the Obama people, who are there as professionals. So they're not political appointees. He just does whatever they want in terms of making the Bureau woke and treating half of the country as an enemy. So it can't be changed on its own. You need a president who's focused on it. Trump didn't understand it. He thought if we just get rid of the first top levels of people, it could be fixed. Entirely wrong way to do it. So like a lot of bureaucracies, it just has to be broken into pieces, because we need most of the functions the FBI has. The country needs these abilities: fighting spies, fighting terrorists, fighting child traffickers, this kind of thing.
Do we have
different groups?
Do we have a woke influence in the FBI?
Absolutely. And it's not just at the top anymore. They've been recruiting for now half of a person's career. So the people who first came in under Obama are now halfway through their career. So they're the special agents in charge. They're the mid-level management, and even higher, because with DEI, you promote people not based on their merit, but based on the DEI criteria. So you've got a lot of DEI token appointees throughout the Bureau that, and others who just go along with it. So that's the way they get promoted. So from top to bottom, the place is rotten. And you can't fire these people because they're civil service.
Read recently that there, in fact, is a way to get rid of them without firing them.
Right.
Reductions,
you can abolish the
force.
Position.
Reductions in force.
Yes. RIFs, and then just abolishing positions.
So that the Congress can refuse to fund at a certain level, which forces them to have to reduce the size of their staff.
Right. And the Attorney General can do the same.
What did you learn in writing the book?
Learned a lot, because I had only set out to look at the past few years and ended up going back 100 years and found that while young J. Edgar Hoover was warning the Congress about communist dangers and foreign subversion coming from Moscow to the United States, in Moscow at a meeting in 1922, they were planning on spreading what has been called cultural Marxism, to tear apart our societies, to tear apart our values, our beliefs in the founding of our country, our constitutional system, our morals, everything else, to destroy us so that we can just self-destruct and the communists can then come in and have that kind of a revolution that the cultural Marxist revolution instead of an economic one. So that it's been a Soviet active measure this whole time for 100 years that outlasted the Soviet Union, and it's become the operating system of the FBI and CIA.
Mike, we have to take a quick break, but where can people get your book?
On Amazon, any place online, at Costco. It's on sale at Costco now. So lots of places to get it.
Good. We'll be right back and continuing our conversation with Mike Weller.
I'm Dan Perkins, the author of a new historical romance novel called Sad Eyes. It is a story of a young woman, a beautiful Irish lass with red hair, green eyes, and curves that won't quit. She is born in 1912 in Waterloo, Iowa. She decides she wants to be an ER nurse, but she wants to move away from Waterloo to the excitement of the big city. She is accepted at St. James School of Nursing in Chicago and began a life as a true American patriot, serving her country in two wars. She fell in love with the love of her life. She takes the longest honeymoon in history. This novel is full of twists and turns and is difficult to put down. You can find Sad Eyes at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and jcarrollpublishing.com, or through your local bookstore. Get it, read it, tell people about it, and write a review on Amazon. This is Dan Perkins.
Welcome back. The Truth Starts Now with our guest, Mike Weller, who's living in a house that he thinks may have begun in the 1700s that he bought off of Craigslist and reassembled. It's amazing. You said at the break you wanted to talk about a couple of things. You said that the changes that took place in the CIA and the FBI were, my words, almost parallel with each other. Why do you think that was?
Well, it was the same Obama executive order from 2011, but there's something larger than that. It's a global phenomenon. So this happened with Britain's MI5, Internal Security Service. It's MI6, Foreign Intelligence Service. It happened with the CSIS, Secret Service of Canada. It happened with Australia. It happened with New Zealand, all the same at about the same time. So the Five Eyes, so our main intelligence allies worldwide, all went this radical, crazy, rainbow, you know, BLM type DEI wokeness all at once. And
did it start with reasons
to figure out how that happened.
I was going to say, did it start with Obama and his influence on a global basis cause it to change another? How is it that so many countries around the same time went the same direction?
It looks like it started with the British first and then spread here. The Five Eyes intelligence services of those five countries, they cooperate very closely on everything. But it just seemed to spread like a pestilence.
And it's continued.
It continues to continue because with these guys, with critical theory, which was something that Marx developed, because before we know the Marx who wrote the Communist Manifesto of 1848, but before that, before he went into economics, his 1843 writings from 5 years before, it was all about destroying culture, destroying national heritage, destroying the Greco-Roman and Judeo-Christian foundations of that, destroying village life, destroying religious faith, destroying the nuclear family, and all the morals and all the social code that went around it, because it was all oppressive. So the people need to break free from that oppression by rebelling against parents, of rebelling against clergy, rebelling against tradition, rebelling against God. That was Marx. Then he couldn't get any traction on that. So then he wrote the Communist Manifesto as an economic revolution of the working proletariat class against the wealthy few bourgeoisie that was supposedly oppressing everybody, sometimes it was. So that wasn't going to happen, though, after the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. The Soviets realized, we're not going to have the West European and American workers having a violent revolution, so let's go back to the cultural Marxism and just completely annihilate their culture, have them do it to themselves. And they said, it's going to take decades, it's going to take generations. We won't be alive to see the fruits of it, but it has to happen. And that was in 1922.
And it's happened.
Yeah, so in big intel, and it was a Soviet intelligence operation. The head of what became the KGB was part of the meeting. So that spread it out. It outlasted the life of the Soviet Union, and it built a life of its own. So it's become an undead creature that's been moving throughout. You can see it happen in churches. You can see it happen in our own politics. You can see it happen in our military and our education systems. So the same thing's happening within the FBI and the CIA.
The two organizations, FBI and CIA, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was under the impression that the CIA didn't operate within the United States. They were charged to operate with activities outside the United States. They didn't pay attention to their rules. They decided to operate within the United States.
Yeah. It's not only their rules, it's federal law. So what they're doing, and they call themselves agents of change. We're secret agents of change. So that's illegal. They're not supposed to be changing anything in our country. They're supposed to be collecting foreign intelligence, analyzing it for our decision makers so they can make, for the, you know, the executive branch, so they can make national security decisions based on this. There's nothing about changing our society and our culture, yet that's what the CIA is doing now. Same with the FBI. So it's not enough to simply, you know, let's say what you're working in the FBI or the CIA and you've got a career there and you're doing work that really matters. It's not enough just to be polite to your colleagues around you, recognizing that, okay, culture's changing. There's people who have different lifestyles and I'm totally not into it at all, but I'm going to just be kind and collegial. That's not enough. It's not simply enough to just go along. And it's not even enough to simply say the words that you now have to say, whether it's pronouns or whatever other silliness that there is. You have to be a participant now, meaning you have to be what they call an advocate and manifest your support for this. It's kind of like Winston Smith in Orwell's novel 1984, where he was working in the Ministry of Truth. And he didn't believe in Big Brother, but he didn't believe that 2 + 2 = 5, but they broke him until he believed that 2 + 2 = 5. And that he finally did love Big Brother. And as the former FBI agent Baker, who you'd interviewed before, said, Big Brother is family now.
What's the likelihood that it will ever change?
It can still change. It'll be a really rough change, and they won't go peaceably because these woke DEI cultural revolutionaries are permeated throughout the system and they leak like crazy. And that's a crime every time they leak classified information. They're not prosecuted for it, and it's been going on for decades, but they leak like crazy. And we saw what's happened in the past. It's going to happen again. Like just today, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas announced that he's setting up a new advisory group that includes the very intelligence chiefs of Obama who surfaced and spread the fake Russian collusion narrative and the lie that Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation. So they're doing something to interfere with us as a society, with our electoral process and our political candidates to make sure that people who support them as they are remain in political power. But if say Donald Trump gets in, if he has a good transition team that's coherent, where they trust each other and they have an agenda where they can go out the gates from the day after election to prepare for the inauguration day and then have a series of executive orders to limit the powers of the FBI and the CIA and then to break them. The neat thing is that the FBI was created by executive order, was not created by law, or was created by an attorney general memorandum. So it can be modified and even broken into pieces and transferred to other bureaus and agencies, the different functions, to decentralize its functions. It can be done by a president who doesn't need Congress to do that. Then he can have it enacted into law to make the changes permanent. And then another thing that a president can do is to hand power back to the states. Like most county sheriffs don't understand the huge power that they have, but the FBI and all federal agencies depend on local police and county sheriffs as their eyes and ears in those localities. Sheriffs have the power to keep federal agents out, except for extreme circumstances, which they can do. They can either refuse to cooperate or cooperate, arrange for cooperation on their own terms. So if we empower the sheriffs under current laws and practices and make them aware of the authorities that they have, that will be a very big step. And then the FBI cannot function at the local level without the permission of the county sheriff, who's elected by the county citizens.
Is I'm reminded of the confrontation between the House Judiciary Committee and Director Wray when they were trying to withhold information and documents. I looked at that along with other things that have happened, and I'm saying Director Wray sat in front of the Congress and lied to the Congress about the nature and honesty and truthfulness of the information that was on the Biden laptop computer. They lied to Congress, they lied to the American people, but there were no consequences.
Right.
If
Yeah.
we promote the idea that you can lie to Congress because there is no penalty for lying to Congress, how do we ever bring about change?
Well, there is a penalty for lying to Congress. It's a crime. You've had people put on trial just in the past few years for lying to Congress. So it's the thing is, no attorney general like Merrick Garland is not going to charge anybody with lying to Congress, so they get away with it. Congress has an alternative. It can keep dragging officials up and forcing questions out of them, but these guys keep lying and lying and lying or simply not answering to the point where the FBI director said, "I'm sorry, I can't stay any longer for this hearing. I have a flight to catch," which it was his private executive jet that the FBI director has. We're all funding it. And he was going to go on vacation. So it wasn't like he needed to catch a plane. And it's also that he didn't know that there'd be a very important Senate oversight hearing. He just has no reason to fear Congress because he knows that they won't do anything. So when you had the House this past year, they just slashed the FBI budget. They started by 30%. They ended up slashing it by 15% because of compromises and zero funding for the new FBI headquarters that's going to be built on land that's twice the size of the Pentagon. Imagine that. The current FBI headquarters is less than two blocks in a footprint, and now they want to have something that's almost the size of the Kremlin in terms of its
Wow.
footprint. So they slashed all that out, but then at the end, with the back and forth between with the continuing resolution nonsense and keeping the government open, the House collapsed, and a bunch of Republicans defected to join the Democrats to make sure that the FBI received funding for its new headquarters and that the cuts were restored.
Unbelievable. Are you writing anything else?
Well, this is it right now. It's just, yes, I have a lot in mind. There is much more on this. I had to cut out about a quarter of the book to keep it manageable. So there's a lot more
I've
there.
Done that myself.
Yeah, so can't let anything go to waste. There's and then I have a few other projects that I would really like to do. One is on subversion and how it works, and take a look historically. I used to teach political warfare as a graduate school professor, and the elements of subversion and how it's worked throughout history since the Bible times, since the ancient Hebrews. So that how they did it, how the Greeks did it, how the Roman Empire did it, how various upstart groups did it throughout history, all the way up to the present day. It's something that we really don't understand. The left understands it well, but they project and they say that, you know, we're all being subversive of American values, whatever that is. But I want to look at how does it work as a political technology, as a psychological technology, and how has it been used over time so that the reader can then look for themselves at how has it happened to us?
Do you believe we have in our bureaucrats, at some levels, a belief that they're superior to the American people, and the American people should not be given the right to make decisions, can only rest with the elite at the top of various agencies?
Absolutely. I lived in the DC area for over 40 years since college. Never became part of the swamp, never went into government to serve, even though I did work with the CIA under Bill Casey long ago when the communists were taking over Central America. But I was working in a private sector capacity for Casey, and it turns out he was paying out of his pocket. I didn't know it at the time. But I was never part of the swamp. I got to see it up close, and I have, you know, government officials as neighbors. And there is a profound opinion throughout the career civil service and senior executive service that the American people are too stupid to be trusted with government. So the permanent class of government should really run the country. And this is where you have this whole idea of this nanny state telling us what to do because government knows best.
And the government, in order to achieve the bureaucratic level that they want of influence and power, they can lie to the American people with no consequences.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to hold them accountable? You have hearings here and there, and they're great to have these hearings come out, but what are the consequences for it? Nothing except increased budgets.
So we're going to have to leave, but I have one quick question. Is there going to be a bill of impeachment against Joe Biden?
There ought to be, but he's not really president. We all know that. He's just sitting there as the constitutionally elected individual, but he's not coherent anymore. And he ought to be impeached, not just because I think he's being a terrible president, but he's flagrantly violating federal law with just the border here. He's opened up our country to foreign enemies on purpose.
Well, Mike, we're out of time, but it was a pleasure to have you on the show. Fascinating conversation. I'm going to invite you back one more time. Tell us where we can get your book.
So the book, Big Intel, it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and any Costco in the country.
Okay. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Thank you for joining us today, and we'd like to hear your comments or questions. So go to bwradionetwork.com. That's bwradionetwork.com, and give us your questions or comments. And thanks for joining us today.